You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a federal program that tries to help children get access to health insurance could be in jeopardy as political fighting in Washington, D.C. continues. We'll find out what the CHIP program means in Wisconsin coming up. Now, it's been a big year in Wisconsin news. Earlier in the show today, we looked at some of the most significant events in and around the state capitol with WPR's own Laurel White. Now we'll dig into the stories that had a lot of significance for communities and people around the state. Those include the Foxconn deal, the reorganization of the UW system, the Packers national anthem protests, and more. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 from where you're sitting. What was the top story in Wisconsin in your community? And what do you think of the Foxconn deal? Do you think your community, wherever you are in the state, are going to see benefits? How about this idea of reorganizing the UW system, linking two-year colleges with four-year campuses? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Robert Mentzer is a statewide living and storytelling editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin. He's based in Wausau. He joins us just about every Friday for a look at the week's biggest state news stories. We asked him for a look back at 2017. Rob, good to have you back.
Hey, Rob. Thanks.
Well, one of the biggest stories clearly was that Foxconn deal, bringing in the big technology plant to southeastern Wisconsin. How about the rest of the state? If you're not in that immediate community, are people seeing this as a big story?
Well, I mean, it's quite clearly a big story, and there are already some signs that it's going to be a big, it could be a big issue in next year's elections across the state. But it's just that there are some data that it might cut in not the way that Governor Scott Walker or others might have anticipated. The first public data that we have on this came from the Marquette University Law School poll. And polling just in southeastern Wisconsin, the numbers on the deal were not that positive. They found only 38% of respondents said they thought that it would end up being a good deal for Wisconsin. 65% found that did not think that they or their families would benefit from it. And that's in the region that's most affected. So, Democrats have already made sounds about this that they think that it could end up being a winning issue for them. Particularly the $3 billion. Incentive package that the state offered in order to land the Foxconn deal.
There have been some surveys of business groups around the state, and a lot of local chambers of commerce signed on in favor of the Foxconn incentive deal, hoping that it'll have kind of a secondary impact. They will be suppliers to Foxconn and related industries. What are we hearing from the business communities around the state?
Exactly so, and it's such a, I mean, the deal is so massive. It's a $10 billion factory that there are as many as 13,000 jobs involved when it's up and running. Now, we should take both of those numbers with a grain of salt, but the point is they are huge figures, and a development of that size certainly would have supply chain effects, and there might be firms all over the state that would be able to get in on that and want, directly or indirectly benefit from that business. It may also be the case that people's own sense, what do you learn from a survey? People's own sense of what is good or bad for the economy may be wrong. They may not have the best idea of what will benefit or not Wisconsin. But of course, if you're a politician, it's a political question, and whether those effects will be felt, soon enough or clearly enough for people to really get on board and see it as a positive is a question that we're going to learn the answer to, but it may be a challenge.
And it's interesting because a lot of this deal, both the state spending part of it and the job impact part of it, will only be barely beginning in 2018.
Right. This is right. And so, from the beginning, this has been a big story for the state of Wisconsin this year because Governor Scott Walker's has articulated a vision of the way that it could reshape Wisconsin's economy and create a new Silicon Valley in southeastern Wisconsin. And that's a big vision, and you can see people, you can imagine someone getting sort of fired up by that as a possible future and a way that this area would be prosperous. And that, I think that would be great. Everyone thinks that would be great, but that's like a long-term vision. And at least the early receipts on the politics of the issue are going to come in much sooner than that.
We've heard from people from the State Department of Administration Secretary to House Speaker Paul Ryan saying, hey, we have a problem in Wisconsin keeping educated, you know, college graduates from Wisconsin, keeping them here in Wisconsin. They're hoping Foxconn will reverse that, will put Wisconsin on the map where we're not only not losing those college graduates, we're luring them in from other states. What are the hopes people are pinning on that?
All of that, for sure. Although also, I mean, they are manufacturing jobs, right? Mm-hmm. So they are, the hope also is that they would provide the sort of backbone of, you know, historically Wisconsin's economy of a manufacturing job that you can support a family with or, you know, make a good wage with. And so, you know, there's like management structures and professional jobs that come along with something of this size, and that would be a big economic boost. But also, I mean, they're looking for people to be making good money on the floor of the factories.
We're talking about some of the top Wisconsin news stories of 2017 with Rob Mentzer from USA Today Network Wisconsin. Right now talking about Foxconn, and let's bring out a caller now. Jeff is with us from Racine. Jeff, hi.
Hello, Rob and Rob.
What do you think?
Well, you know, initially I thought this would be great to have, you know, the jobs created here. But the size and the scope of this project will immensely change, you know, the feel of our community. You know, I live in Racine because I like the size of things. I like the amount of traffic. There are no traffic jams. You know, it seems like it's going to become almost a suburb of Chicago, and that concerns me a lot, just the feel of the community after all this project is done.
Jeff, thanks a lot. Yeah, for better or worse, Rob, that area is going to change.
No doubt. Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, so I live in the central part of the state in Wausau, and so it's easy for me to see it as a, you know, pure economic matter. But if it's in your backyard, I mean, it's a massive campus with a whole lot of new traffic and infrastructure needs for sure.
Let's take another caller on economic issues in the state. Steve is with us in Danbury. Steve, hi.
Hi. Well, we have no way of knowing what the benefit or the impact of Foxconn will be for southeastern Wisconsin and whether those billions spent to lure them here will make a difference. But I'm from the far northwest here, and up here, despite 7 years of Republican promises and rhetoric, we've yet to see any real economic benefit from Republican control of the legislature and the governorship. In fact, we see more and more stores being shuttered on Main Street. We see minimum wage stagnant. So overall, the promises just haven't been realized here.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. And Rob, Wisconsin as a whole seeing low unemployment, but that doesn't mean Wisconsin everywhere. There are some communities that are still feeling left behind after the recovery from the Great Recession.
Yeah, that's 100% right. The Wisconsin's economy is doing well, but it is very hard to see how the Foxconn deal or really much else reverses the issue of sort of closing shops on small town main streets, which is going on across the state.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking about some of the top stories in Wisconsin news in 2017. Rob Mentzer is with us from USA Today Network Wisconsin. He's based in Wausau. We focused on Foxconn so far. We're going to be getting into some other issues, a mass shooting in the Wausau area, Packers National Anthem protest, UW reorganization, and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234 on those issues or whatever you think is the top story in Wisconsin of the year. We're looking back at the biggest state news stories of 2017. Rob Mentzer is with us from the USA Today Network Wisconsin. He's based in Wausau. You can join in. What is your news story of the year in Wisconsin? Call 800-642-1234. We spent some time on Foxconn there, Rob. Let's move to other stories now. Back in March, it seems like so long ago in some ways, but still fresh in the area, a man from Weston aiming to kill his estranged wife, killed two of her coworkers, her divorce lawyer, and a police officer in that area, in the Wausau area. Tell us how that's affected the community there, Rob.
Sure. Well, so it's this is a year that had some of the worst mass shootings in U.S. history, in Las Vegas and in Texas. And this is not one of those. It is as grim as it is to say there are many worse mass shootings by body count. But this was the first. This was the deadliest shooting in Wisconsin since the Sikh temple shooting in 2012. And you know, it really shows the way that that such an event, that violence like that, affects all parts of the community. This is a community where I live, and we've seen the mourning process that the community has undergone, and ways that people have found ways to memorialize those four victims, and just the ways that event on March 22nd is still very much felt and very much present throughout this community.
And this was a domestic violence related crime. Has that brought more awareness in that part of the state to the dangers of domestic violence?
Yeah, I mean that's right, exactly right. The gunman was seeking to kill his estranged wife. Her coworkers at the bank where she worked saved her life, hid her from him, and two of them died in the shooting. The Wausau Daily Herald, organized an event about a month after the shootings to discuss domestic violence issues and talk people through the ways that the law enforcement and legal system responds and what is available. There are a lot of committed people working in this community on that issue, but it is an illustration of the stakes that are very real in these cases.
And it's sort of a tangential note. I understand there's a community effort aimed at fostering racial and cultural understanding in the Wausau area. It happened to start shortly before this tragedy. Tell us about Toward One Wausau.
Right. Yes, Toward One Wausau was a really an interesting effort that went on this year in Wausau. That was about, a discussion of racial injustice and how can the city be a welcoming community for people of all different backgrounds. And for sure, the group felt like it needed to respond to in the wake of the shootings, as sort of everyone in the community did. And it was, it turned out to be an interesting effort. There were a number of community dialogues on all kinds of issues, policing and inclusion of racial diversity in other ways that I think led to some interesting places, and definitely were a worthy conversation that I think benefited the community.
Want to move on to another story. In the later part of the year, a reorganization of the UW system, especially affecting two-year campuses and UW Extension. And as a disclaimer, WPR employees, including me, are part of UW Extension. That said, Rob, can you remind us the main parts of this restructuring?
Right. Well, I mean, the main part is that all the two-year campuses become part of a nearby four-year campus. They are under the auspices of whatever is a near or large four-year school. This was, it's a bit hard to say what the impact of this will be in the long term. There are a lot of people who are, I think it's fair to say that the concerns around it are about the direction of higher education in Wisconsin. So it's in the context of declining enrollment in the UW system, but also declining state support over many years. And this is a consolidation that happened very quickly from the time it was unveiled to the public to the time that it was voted in by the Board of Regents was really just a matter of a few weeks. And so I think that some in the UW system are a bit shell-shocked by that and worried about what the consolidation sort of foretells about cuts or future, the ways that UW services will dwindle.
And it's not just an issue, it seems like, for people in education in particular, people going to school or working in schools. People in local governments, local community leaders, were concerned about this too, what this means for their local identity.
No doubt. And you know, on the most practical level, the two-year campuses are owned by counties, by the local counties. That's who owns the buildings on UW System's two-year campuses, and that's a longstanding situation. So what does this mean for those communities when now the campus is actually sort of, you know, quote-unquote part of, you know, UW-Stevens Point or whatever? The other thing that is so important here is that the role that the two-year campuses play, one of the crucial roles that they play is by having that accessibility to students from different sorts of backgrounds, students who might be the first in their family to go to college. And I think that that's one of the major concerns about the move is, will that accessibility be lost or reduced in the course of the consolidations?
We're looking at some of the top news stories in Wisconsin in 2017. Rob Menser is with us from the USA Today Network, Wisconsin. Sports, Rob, often a getaway from politics. Not this last couple of years, really. The protests during the national anthems at a lot of NFL games in particular have been controversial from the White House on down. The Packers, not an exception to this. So take us back to September 24th, the Packers game when they hosted the Cincinnati Bengals.
This is very 2017. This story has all the elements of that says what 2017 was, I think. So you know, this just consumed the nation for a little while. The genesis of it all is in Colin Kaepernick, the former San Francisco 49ers quarterback, who I think there's evidence to say has been blackballed from the NFL over his decision to protest racial injustice by kneeling during the national anthem. A number of NFL players began to emulate his protest, or in the case of the Packers, Aaron Rodgers, to find other ways to show solidarity, such as linking arms during the anthem. And then it all was turned up to maximum volume when President Donald Trump started publicly calling on the NFL to fire all players who were protesting in any way and was calling on people to boycott the NFL. Fans were furious at Aaron Rodgers. This came to a head in the game when Rodgers asked fans to link arms and other fans were angrily denouncing that move. It was a whole fight. That's 2017, isn't it?
Yeah, and if there's one thing over the years I could say that a Republican and a Democrat in Wisconsin could usually agree on, it's going to be the Packers. And to see that sort of shaken a little bit, that's something.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And everyone sort of knew what exactly how to go to their corner or what their role was. I mean, long story short, people did not boycott the NFL. That did not happen. The team owners met with players, and they agreed to give some money to some social justice causes, and basically the issue sort of cooled off. For a little while there, that was like the culture war. It was it was all anyone wanted to talk about.
And I want to get to a figure in Wisconsin politics you've followed from afar, David Clark, former Milwaukee County Sheriff. There was a lot of David Clark-related news throughout 2017.
Yeah, speaking of...
And 2016.
Culture war issues, right? It was year of Sheriff David Clark. So in January... a guy walked past him on an airplane and shook his head, committed the crime of shaking his head at Milwaukee Sheriff David Clark, and Clark ordered deputies to detain the man at the gate when the plane landed, which is at least an overreaction at worst, incredibly unconstitutional violation of the guy's rights. In April, an inquest released some truly awful details about a man who was kept in a cell in the Milwaukee County Jail without food or water and died from dehydration. That happened under Clark's auspices. And then, you know, there were other Clark stories. He was, like, in the news every – he was saying something outrageous or getting in a fight with someone every week for a while. He was very open about his desire to join the Trump administration, but the word on it was that he couldn't be confirmed by – through the Senate for something like the Department of Homeland Security or whatever. He eventually did resign from his office as sheriff in August, and he's joined the – a pro-Trump PAC. Basically, he's a political guy now, which I guess is what he wanted to be all along.
And Rob, as we start to wrap up, what kind of stories are you watching for in 2018? A lot of the ones we've talked about today are to be continued, obviously.
Yeah, I was thinking about this myself, and certainly, you know, politics is going to sort of eat all of 2018, starting very soon with the governor's race and the various state races, and a Senate race as well. One thing that I think we need to be paying close attention to for 2018 is, you know, Wisconsin's election maps were heard at the U.S. Supreme Court on that's going to issue a ruling sometime in 2018 on whether they are so gerrymandered as to be unconstitutional. There's a chance that state legislative maps could be altered, thrown out, changed next year, depending on where the U.S. Supreme Court decides to come down on that issue. But that was a major news event in itself when that was heard at the Supreme Court in October, and certainly the outcome of that will be a major news event in 2018.
We'll have plenty to talk to you about on Fridays, Rob. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
All right, thank you.
We've been talking to Robert Mentzer, statewide living and storytelling editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin. He's based in Wausau. He joined us today to highlight some of the biggest state news stories of 2017. You can catch him each Friday for our weekly Wisconsin News Roundup. The Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, provides health coverage for more than 9 million kids in the United States. In Wisconsin, nearly 100,000 children benefit from that program. CHIP is arguably one of the few federal programs that has nearly unanimous bipartisan support among lawmakers and voters. But the program's future has been uncertain since it stopped receiving funding in September. In a last-ditch effort last week, lawmakers in Congress allocated $3 billion to CHIP. That would just fund the program through March of next year, potentially leaving families and states without a way to provide this coverage. John Peacock is with us now. He's the research director at Kids Forward. John, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Give us the basics, first of all. John, what is CHIP and what does it do?
Well, it's a federal program that has enabled states to expand coverage for kids and working families. As you said, it covers over 9 million kids nationwide and more than 100,000 kids in Wisconsin who have access to affordable health insurance thanks to this source of federal financing. It was created essentially as a successor of the welfare reform efforts 20 years ago after kind of blowing up the welfare system. Public policymakers, both Democrats and Republicans, were concerned that low-income families entering the workforce oftentimes didn't have employer offers of insurance for kids, or if they did, they couldn't afford it. And CHIP was designed to encourage states to expand coverage to kids in working families, to build on top of the Medicaid system for lower income families who weren't working, and to make sure that working families also had access to health insurance for their kids.
As I understand it, this was done in kind of a block grant style, meaning that it wasn't a federal program that works the same in each state. It's, hey, state, here's an amount of money, implement this the best you can. Is that right?
Yeah. Exactly.
So how did we approach that here in Wisconsin?
In Wisconsin, 20 years ago, we used the CHIP funding to create Badger Care. Badger Care was a bipartisan initiative under the leadership of Governor Thompson and Democrats in the state legislature that made health insurance, well, essentially expanded Medicaid, instead of creating a separate program with CHIP funding, which a lot of states did, we combined CHIP with our other Medicaid funding to create BadgerCare and to make that insurance available to both kids and parents and pregnant women up to twice the federal poverty level. And so it was, in fact, Wisconsin was a leader back at that time in terms of being one of the first states to cover parents as well as kids in the program.
So it sounds likely that if someone listening is receiving CHIP, they don't know it. They might know that they're receiving some assistance via BadgerCare.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in fact, it's really hard for even policy wonks like myself to tell you exactly which kids are financed with CHIP and which are financed with Medicaid. Essentially, CHIP is a source of funding that goes into BadgerCare, but it makes but BadgerCare itself is seamless coverage regardless of the source of federal funding.
Now, let's take this to Congress now. The funding expired back in September, and Congress didn't renew it. We've got a temporary fix now. So what was happening in September, and what would that mean for health care?
Well, because it is a block grant, and almost all states had at least a month or two or three of funding from the previous year that they hadn't spent yet. And in Wisconsin, actually, we had enough funding left to get us until March, maybe even April. And so we haven't been too worried about sort of imminently running out of funding, or at least a few months ago, we weren't too worried about that. But in a number of states, they were running out of funding starting in January, and several states started sending out notices to families that their kids were going to be cut off. Now, fortunately, well, since then, since September, Congress has just kind of kicked the can down the road several times, as they sometimes do. Although, I should say, they haven't done that on this program. As you correctly stated, this program has enjoyed tremendous bipartisan support. It's been a huge success story nationwide since it was created 20 years ago. The number of uninsured kids has been cut in half. And it just consistently had the support of both Republicans and Democrats. And so it's odd that this time around, there hasn't been quite the same degree of commitment to get this done. But Congress has been kind of kicking the can from time to time, providing a little extra funding. But that's created a tremendous amount of uncertainty for states and, more importantly, for parents who have a lot of anxiety about whether their kids are going to be cut off.
We're talking to John Peacock from the group Kids Forward here in Wisconsin, looking at CHIP, this federal insurance program that aims to help kids get covered, kids between a certain level of income in their families. And John, I know you're not a congressional politics analyst, but the debate, as I understand it here, isn't, people aren't making the case we need to get rid of CHIP. It's sort of a casualty of other debates in Congress. Is that right?
Yeah, and I don't get exactly why it hasn't gotten done this time around, but part of the biggest dispute in recent months has been that there is some growth in the cost of the program and the question of how are they going to pay for that. And there's been debate about that. I believe they worked out a compromise, a bipartisan compromise in the Senate on that a couple weeks ago, but now they have that bipartisan compromise, but I think CHIP, in a sense, may have become a bargaining chip to use against some other things, and I think maybe that's part of the holdup at this point.
So funding provided in this compromise, this was just over the last week in the spending extension. It's funded now until March. From what you were saying, I imagine Wisconsin, if it just weren't reauthorized, could hold out until the summer. But what do state planners and families need to be looking at, not knowing for sure that the money is still going to be there?
Well, as I indicated before, states have actually done somewhat different things with the CHIP money, and we combined it with or used it as a funding source for BadgerCare in a way that that coverage doesn't necessarily lapse when the funding runs out. In a lot of states, they created it as a separate program, and if that federal funding dries up, the program ends. That's not true in Wisconsin. Parents with kids in BadgerCare don't have to worry necessarily that the program will go away if the federal funding goes away, because the coverage is protected by state statutes. The legislature would have to come back and say, geez, we have a hole in our federal budget. And it's going to be a hole of about $10 million a month once that funding runs out. But if at some point the governor and the state legislature said, geez, we can't keep providing this coverage because of the lack of funding, that would be very problematic.
So it would be either come up with another source of funding or potentially some kind of cuts to the services.
Or somewhere else in the state budget. Right.
Now, Governor Walker tweeted, I just saw this earlier today, Congress needs to renew the Children's Health Insurance Program ASAP. So are we hearing from Democrats and Republicans like Governor Walker here at the state level on this?
Yes, certainly. Certainly the governor on a number of occasions has said it should be extended, and it's in his best interest to do that, because without this funding, there will be a big hole in the state budget.
Now, looking at the big picture, you mentioned that the Children's Health Insurance Program had really cut the rates of uninsured children. Since this came into law, we have the Affordable Care Act, which has been through a lot of ups and downs itself. Where are we in terms of covering kids overall in Wisconsin?
Well, we've made huge strides in Wisconsin, although our improvement has been slower in recent years than in other states. And one reason, as I indicated before, back 20 years ago when we created Badger Care, and Governor Thompson said, look, as part of welfare reform, we should make sure that when parents are entering the workforce, that they are covered and that they don't have to give up their job and have their income go down in order to qualify for Medicaid again. So we made parents and kids eligible up to twice the poverty level. But back in 2014, Governor Walker reversed course on that. He and the legislature cut in half the eligibility ceiling for parents, reducing it from 200% of the poverty level down to 100%. And that was tied to the Affordable Care Act. They said under that law, families were going to have access to subsidized insurance through the new federal marketplace, and that thanks to those subsidies, we didn't need to make Badger Care be as generous as it was before.
And did things pan out that way?
Well, some of those parents, about 60,000 adults, lost their coverage. Less than half of them ended up being covered in the marketplace. Some others got other coverage. It looks like maybe two-fifths of them became uninsured. It's unclear, but I think quite a few of them became uninsured because the marketplace coverage was not as affordable. But in the meantime, there was collateral damage for coverage for kids, because when you cover parents in Medicaid and when they're signing up, they also end up signing up their kids and making sure their kids are signed up. And we saw that with a huge growth in coverage of kids back when Badger Care was created. And other states, as they were expanding in recent years, coverage of parents, more kids also were drawn in. The reverse has happened in Wisconsin. So we used to be in the top 10 states in terms of coverage of kids. We've dropped to 20th nationally as we reduced parent coverage and other states expanded parent coverage.
John Peacock is with us now. He's research director at Kids Forward, which advocates for children and families in Wisconsin. He's with us to talk about the Children's Health Insurance Program, which has been facing funding challenges in Congress. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the state of CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program? What do you think about Congress's approach to funding it and the debate there? If you benefit from CHIP, if you receive Badger Care that helps provide insurance coverage for kids, that may be coming from this CHIP funding. We'd like to hear from you as well. And do you have questions about how this all works? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. We're continuing our conversation now about the future of the federal Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP. It provides health insurance for an estimated 9 million children in the U.S., close to 100,000 here in Wisconsin. Our guest is John Peacock, research director at the group Kids Forward. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234 with your comments and your questions. Are you hoping Congress seals the deal to extend CHIP out into the future? There's a short-term fix lasting just a few months now. Do you have questions about how the Children's Health Insurance Program works, who it serves? Would you like to see a bigger, more comprehensive program? What do you think of the state of this debate in Congress? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. And John, I mean, there's been a lot of advocacy on this issue for Congress from, you know, late night TV comedy talk shows to the general public, people within Congress. Do you think that, apart from the other issues in Congress, that this is going to get done?
Yeah, I'm pretty optimistic about it. I mean, everybody in Congress says they support it. I mean, the question is, are they truly willing to fund it, and at what level? And but generally speaking, the tentative deals that have been out there have been ones that we supported, although there have been some things that have been done in terms of funding that we have problems with. In particular, like this short-term deal that they just reached to provide a couple more months of funding, takes that funding out of a public health program in the Affordable Care Act that provides funding for things like immunizations for kids. So we're funding health insurance for kids by taking money away from immunizations for kids. I think that's unfortunate. And there's really no excuse for doing that kind of thing at a time when Congress has just made a commitment to over $1 trillion worth of additional federal debt for a tax bill over the next 10 years. To not come up with a really pretty negligible amount of money for the CHIP program.
And up till now, has CHIP been funded sufficiently to do what it's supposed to do?
Oh, yeah, it has been.
And then looking forward here in Wisconsin, I mean, would you, if this didn't happen, you're confident that it will happen, but do you think that Wisconsin would find the way, the means to pay for it, to meet what we wouldn't be getting from the federal government?
2018 is an election year, of course. I do not see our state policymakers in 2018 deciding that they're going to convene a special session to scale back coverage for kids, and that's what they would have to do. It would take act of the legislature and the governor to change the statutes and reduce coverage. While I say I'm guardedly optimistic that Congress is going to refund CHIP, what I'm more worried about is Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And CHIP sits on the shoulders of the Medicaid program, which provides coverage for lower income families, kids with disabilities, seniors. And it's really the bedrock of our healthcare system is providing coverage for those people who can't get it elsewhere. And in the wake of the passage of this huge federal tax cut, there's been a lot of talk from Speaker Ryan and others about cutting entitlement programs like Medicaid. And there was also an effort in the repeal and replace bill, the Affordable Care Act repeal and replace legislation, to scale back Medicaid, to turn it into a block grant in a way that would be ratcheted down year after year. And so my biggest fear is that even though CHIP is likely to be extended, that the building block that it sits on top of, Medicaid, is going to be steadily eroded.
We're talking to John Peacock from the group Kids Forward, looking at the Children's Health Insurance Program, briefly extended in a short-term fix by Congress, but long-term plans not there. And John, I had wanted to ask you about some of the wider issues on health care. And again, this talk about entitlement reform, as it's called, changes potentially to programs like Medicaid. What kind of worries do you have about particular cuts that might be made?
Well, in particular, block granting worries me a lot, or that it would be changed sometimes an alternative to block granting that has been proposed, or what are called per capita caps, where we wouldn't get the amount of funding that the state needs. Currently, it's a system where the federal government matches whatever the state is willing to spend. And of course, the state wants to spend as little as possible. But if the state decides that because of the opioid epidemic, that it needs to come up with more treatment for opioid addiction for people who qualify for Medicaid, we will qualify for additional federal matching funds to match those state expenditures. Under the per capita cap system, that wouldn't happen anymore. We'd get a fixed amount. And Congress, over time, would dial that amount back year after year to come up with big savings for new tax cuts, for defense spending, whatever.
And a concern I've heard raised about things like block grants or those per capita caps is, okay, you've got this set amount per year. What happens when there's either a new public health emergency that raises costs or an economic downturn that makes more people, say, out of work and needing public health help? Then there's no flexibility there. Is that right?
Well, that's especially true under the block grant approach, that if there's an economic downturn, you're really hurting because it's not going to grow as the number of people being served grow. With the per capita caps, at least as the number of Medicaid recipients grows, you'll get more money. But as you need to spend more, there may be demographic changes that make the cost for each person higher, and that isn't necessarily going to go up the way it needs to go up.
Like in a state with, say, an aging population like Wisconsin.
Exactly.
And then the other big complicated part of this is the Affordable Care Act, efforts to repeal it, the tax overhaul plan. Ended the Affordable Care Act mandate that everybody be covered or face a tax penalty. Big complicated plan, lots of moving parts there. But what are you watching there? What concerns do you have, especially as it impacts coverage of kids?
Well, the enrollment numbers just came in last week, and the enrollment was surprisingly strong across the country and here in Wisconsin. Over 210,000 people in Wisconsin signed up for that coverage for next year. The mandate is still in place in 2018 and goes away in 2019. And the concern there is that without the mandate, that some of the healthier people who are now participating in the marketplace will decide not to. You're left with a less healthy pool of people you're covering. Costs go up, and the average cost per person goes up. Now, the way the program's structured, between 80 and 90% of the participants get premium tax credits from the federal government. So when the premiums go up, actually the federal government pays more. So kind of ironically, one of the effects of what's been done has been to increase the federal costs substantially. But it also, for the people who aren't eligible for those tax credits, their premiums are going up a lot, and that's really unfortunate, and we need to undo some of that damage that has been done.
So you're hopeful, though, that the CHIP part of this story will be taken care of in the first few months of 2018?
As I said, I'm guardedly optimistic that that will happen. We're going to be watching that carefully, but especially watching what happens to Medicaid.
John, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
That's John Peacock. He's research director at Kids Forward. He joined us today to talk about the future of the Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP. Congress just passed a stopgap measure to fund the program through March of 2018.